Four verses, text 22, 23, 24, and 25, chapter 27. This is Kapila continuing. Devahuti is going back about three or four chapters. Devahuti is asked how to become free from being overly attached to family life. And many things are said, including the whole chapter on devotional service, and understanding fundamental principles of material nature. The emphasis on there on detachment through knowledge and meditation of the super soul. And then here, Kapila Dev is taking the discussion another step, and that is living practically according to these teachings that he's given. Where one is seated as though neutral, neither repulsed nor attracted to temporary manifestations, on the strength of knowledge and meditation, and living one's life in a religious way, performing one's duties with consciousness attached to the Supreme. And exhibiting other nice rhythmical qualities as a result, meaning truthfulness, cleanliness, control of the mind and senses, and so forth. So Devahuti then asks, I have a doubt. How is it possible the living entity and matter are inextricably implicated with one another? Even if one, through knowledge, has some detachment from the affairs of matter, the modes of nature are still acting, the previous karma living entity is still acting, and while one may get some relief for some time, is it really possible? It doesn't seem practical. Knowledge alone is not enough. It was one of the themes, and then this other theme was disclosed by Prabhupada in the purport that voidists, they also think this way, that what's the body without the soul, what's the soul without the body? Meaning, for voidists, there isn't a clear conception of the soul, and so if the self leaves the body, what's the self? So it's nothing. And so nothing and nothing equals nothing. So how can the soul become liberated, relieved from the contamination of the material existence? So the answer we discussed this morning, verse 21, through devotional service. I'll read the verse again. Kapila Dev said, one can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me, and thereby hearing for a long time about me or from me. By thus executing one's prescribed duties, there will be no reaction, and one will be free from the contamination of matter. So as a cultivation. We know this from Rupa Goswami's writing. Bhakti is cultivation. So that word anushilana, in his introduction to Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada has translated that as a cultivation. Anu means to follow, and shilana means activity or conduct or behavior. So cultivation of that which is pleasing to Krishna, anushilana. Bhakti is a sort of cultivation, anushilana. So by cultivating that consciousness, devotional consciousness, even while involved in matter, one isn't generating new karma, and the influence of the modes of nature proportionate to the strength of one's Krishna consciousness, the influence of the modes of nature subside, and in that way also the influence of false ego subsides, and one is liberated even within this world. One of the modern sayings is in the world but not of the world. Transcendence in the world but not of the world. Because one's consciousness is with Krishna. These two words are used, anivitta and nivitena. They're going to be repeated again in the upcoming verses, so we'll go over them again. Anivitta, nivitena. Actually, it's two verses in row 20 and 21 have these terms. Anivitta, excuse me, that's anivitta, so. Anivitta nivitena, without pursuing the fruits of activities. Working without attachment to results of work, karma yoga. But what elevates karma yoga beyond karma yoga is to do that instead for Krishna, not just so I can get release of the clutches of karma, but for the satisfaction of Krishna. So, text 22. Now he's going to qualify that first sentence, that first statement. What kind of devotional service? This devotional service has to be performed strongly, tivra. Tivrena. Atma samadhina. With perfect knowledge and with transcendental vision. That's a small qualifier, right? Very strongly, in perfect knowledge, with transcendental vision. Do you know the verse from Canto 2, where the same word Tivrena is used? Akama, Sarva Kama Va. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Devendra Purushanta. We've heard the verse before. Akama, Sarvakama, Mokshakama. Having no material desire, having all material desire, having the desire for liberation. Whatever one's situation is, that covers everything. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Yajeta Purusham Pranam. One can achieve the supreme destination, regardless of consciousness. This is speaking of consciousness that is guided by perfect knowledge. Because if one isn't guided by perfect knowledge, what one very enthusiastically and ardently does may be misinformed. So the qualifier here to achieve the full benefit, because what Devahuti is asking is not just to get material wants, but how to become free from wanting material wants. So then it's guided by perfect knowledge. One must be strongly renounced and must engage in austerity and perform mystic yoga. Well, mystic yoga and the Sati Yoga, in order to be firmly fixed in self-absorption. But this is the Sati Yoga process. And the same as we discussed, the principle for Sati Yoga, if we understand the principle, we can apply it in our present circumstance. The kinds of austerities and the intensity of persons engaged in Sati Yoga, I mean, it's altogether different. I was just reading some description about the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that even in his time, he analyzed the nine processes of bhakti, beginning with Shraddha, Savajana Kriya, Anartya Vritti, to come to the Nishtha stage. So he bundled up the first four into one, this biography of his life. He was describing that even people were misguided during this time, they had basic faith in scripture, and therefore when they got the real thing, devotional service, they very quickly passed by the Anartha Vritti stage. But in just 100 years time, less than 100 years time, a little more than 100 years time, degradation has gone really fast. And so the Anartha Vritti stage is much slower. Even where we have proper knowledge, and with that proper knowledge, faith. And you know, we do things faithfully, but the contaminations are much dirtier, much deeper, much stronger. So what to speak of Sati Yoga. So the demand upon the performer in Sati Yoga is greater. I will say the converse, that the mercy bestowed upon those in Kali Yuga is greater. Or not, the demand of rigors of the austerities of Sati Yuga are not appropriate to us. Like, you know, Dhruva Maharaj, you know, the austerities that he underwent in 6 months to see Lord Vishnu. I mean, it's inconceivable what he did. That's not a Kali Yuga vrata. It's not possible. Or the Prajetas were going underwater for 10,000 years. Is that possible for us? But the principle is there. And Prabhupada writes his purport for modern people. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be formed blindly due to a material emotion or mental concoction. It is specifically mentioned here that one has to perform devotional service in full knowledge by visualizing the absolute truth. That doesn't mean in your imagination, it means through purification. And there's a very nice explanation of Nama Rupa Gundalina. The beginning stage for us is chanting. Anyone can chant to become purified. Sanctified, and in that sanctified state, through undistracted or through attentive chanting, the form of the Lord appears within the mind, according to the teaching of Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Haridas Thakur and Harinam Chintami. We have a mountain of purification to work on. but naturally follows hope. But with proper knowledge and proper performance of our chanting and our other activities, these things can be accomplished. We can understand about the Absolute Truth by evolving transcendental knowledge, and the result of such transcendental knowledge will be the manifestation of renunciation. Again, this Jnana Vairagya Kapha. You understand the temporary nature of things, it's easier to not indulge in the temporary things. To find happiness, which isn't really happiness, and it's temporary. You know, the example that has been given is going to be given again about the happiness or distress in a dream. In a dream, Prabhupada would often say like this, in a dream, you dream that you're a king. Oh, I'm a king, sitting on a throne. How nice. It's just a dream. There's no king, there's no throne, there's no, just a dream. And then into the palace comes a tiger. Then one feels fear, and you wake up, and there's no tiger. There's no throne, there's no kingdom. It was just a dream. Similarly, the happiness and distress during the waking hours of life is also a dream. Daydream, nightdream. When one becomes situated in knowledge, there is detachment from both the dreams at night and the dreams during the day. The dreams of trying to become Purusha, the enjoyer of life. That renunciation is not temporary or artificial, but is very strong. It is said that development of Krishna consciousness is exhibited by proportionate material detachment, or vairagya. People sometimes ask, how do I know if I'm actually progressing in Krishna consciousness? So one answer is this one. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, there is an attraction for the activities of devotional service, and correspondingly a detachment for activities of sense gratification. Very simple, like a litmus test. Acid or base, and put in a litmus paper, and whatever the color is tells you. So, detachment from some of the things, at least some of the things that used to make up your life, they're not an attraction for those things anymore. Maybe some things that one is still attracted to, but some things just not attracted to anymore. That is an indication of advancement of Krishna consciousness. And the attraction, to some degree at least, coming to Nirshala Bhagavatam and Arti and the simple activities, even if it's just based on the faith that I know it's good for me, I know it will purify me, I have confidence in that. To a degree, I have experience of that. So, deep knowledge and detachment. If one does not separate himself from material enjoyment, it is to be understood that he is not advancing in Krishna consciousness. Renunciation in Krishna consciousness is so strong that it cannot be deviated by any attractive illusion. Like Haridas Thakur the prostitute, for example. In contrast, Vishwamitra Muni or Silvery Muni, very, very powerful yogis, but tinkling of the ankle bells of Menaka, got him. One has to perform devotional service in full tapasya, comma, austerity. And then he indicates what austerity. One should fast on the two Ekadasi days. Minimal fasting is fasting from grains and beans. Not very difficult austerity. But minimally do that. And on the birthdays of Lord Krishna, Lord Rama, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are many such fasting days. Yogina means, quote, by controlling the senses and mind, unquote. Yoga indriya samyama. Yogena implies that one is seriously absorbed in the self and is able, by development of knowledge, to understand his constitutional position in relation with his super self. In this way, one becomes fixed in devotional service, and his faith cannot be shaken by any material allurement. Of course, this is well along the nine stages of bhakti. That's stage number five. Nishtha is where one is, his faith is very strong. Even there may be some test when one doesn't become attracted by that distraction. That's an advanced stage. But the power of bhakti is such that it can bring one, which is exactly what is Deva Bhuti's question. There's a spiritual potency within bhakti itself that knowledge alone doesn't have, and karma alone doesn't have. Even prescribed karma doesn't have. Bhakti has this very strong potency. Next verse. 23. The influence of material nature has covered the living entity. That's Deva Bhuti's concern. And thus, it is as if the living entity were always in a blazing fire. But, by the process of seriously discharging devotional service, this influence can be removed just as wooden sticks which cause a fire are themselves consumed by it. That's a nice philosophical purport. But it's something like, use a thorn to remove a thorn. We can utilize objects, the microphone and amplification system and our computer and this and that. We can use these things that are product of the material energy in service to Krishna. And instead of having them act to serve as delusions, they can act as facilities for devotional service. So, and same besides objects, the body or our senses can be used in service to Krishna. And that way, the example is the fire, the blazing fire of material existence, acts in such a way that the sticks that burn to make the fire get consumed in the body. That by the fire of devotional service, the problems created by material entanglement are mitigated, they're gone. There's another verse that comes, that was in the previous section. Yeah, the previous section of this chapter, where the material mind dissolves, and here in the Bhagavad Gita speaks of the mind of the false ego dissolving, like the sticks that burn in the fire. So the material energy itself is not the problem. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. My dear Devahuti, what they were saying. It's not that you're worried about material nature. Material nature is not the problem. The problem is the false ego notion that I can be the enjoyer of that material nature. And that false ego notion arises out of ignorance. So one can dissolve the ignorance, you can dissolve false ego, you can dissolve the implication of man. At the very root. And the way to dissolve that ignorance is through bhakti, properly performed and guided. There's a nice verse in the first canto. Vasudevi Bhagavati Gyanam Cha Yadahaitukam. Knowledge and detachment arise spontaneously from bhakti. So whatever knowledge one needs, whatever detachment one needs, if you can somehow capture the essence of what bhakti is, knowledge and detachment follow. Prabhupada gives this really nice, very simple example. He said in the palace of the king, there's a queen. And the queen has a number of attendants. And wherever she goes in the palace, they follow around her to do whatever she wants. But the chaste queen, she's not interested in the attendants and the things they want to do. She's interested in the king. A chaste queen has that interest. So a devotee can similarly be followed by knowledge of attachment, but it isn't thinking, oh, how nice, now I have this knowledge, and oh, how nice they are. They're just interested in the service of Krishna, which is the principle that's being described here. Deva Bhuti, the sensual response Kapila Deva is giving. It's very basic, but it's important. It's like the question that you asked the other day about decision making, and besides entering into the space of goodness, you think, all the place of Krishna. I mean, whatever you're going to do, should I turn left or right? Should I take more sankirtan? Or should I, you know, chant an extra round at a Kapasi day? Or whatever it is that you're thinking about, will be facing Krishna. And, you know, balancing the other things that you need to also do that's facing Krishna. So that's the Bhakti principle. And by that Bhakti principle, the impelling force of material nature control of the living entity subsides. Material nature is still there. The modes are still the modes. But the conditioning influence subsides because of this Bhakti principle. There's a power, a potency, the Shakti within Bhakti Shakti. And the false ego subsides, the influence of the modes of nature acting on that false ego subsides. Knowledge awakens through devotion to Krishna. So it's not just a theoretical knowledge, it's a practical knowledge. I won't eat something that's not offered to Krishna. I had this experience some time ago, during that television. One of the things I like to do, because I watch Prabhupada, and often do the Prabhupada, not so many times, but whatever times I was in Prabhupada's quarters, I noticed and heard from his servants, he kept in the corner of his desk a little jar of prasadam. And he explained to his disciples, he learned this from his father, that whenever somebody came, they would always get prasadam. So when people would come to do whatever they came to do, he would have his servant, like, you know, just without exception, give them some prasadam. When I was there, it was a jar of macadamia nuts. It's simple, but you know, some prasadam. Something like when you go to the temple, you take jar number 10 of a little prasadam. So, I like to give mana prasadam. So one time I was at a place, and a little boy, and I offered some prasadam to the little boy. First, he just looked at me. Didn't say anything, didn't do anything, he just looked at me. And maybe he shot. So I, you know, gave to everybody else. And including his mother and father, and then came back to him, and he just looked at me. And then his mother leaned over and said something in his ear, his hand went out. And I asked her, I didn't want to embarrass the little boy when he was gone. I said, what did you say to him? And I told him he was offered to Krishna. Because he likes sweets, but he doesn't want to eat anything that's not offered to Krishna. I don't know too many children like that. But they're not. So just in principle, or another example of the Prabhupada gave, if there's some wealth, someone offers some gold, and the person has their hands go behind their back, we can't touch something material. But the devotee, not in a greedy sense, in a transcendental sense, the hand is extended to receive that which can be used in Krishna service. Then he comments on these purports. It may look like a devotee, is very enthusiastic in their activities of devotional service. It may even look like side by side a devotee and a non-devotee are, there's no difference. There's that verse of a purport in the Bhagavad Gita where two persons working in a factory, and you can't be more identical than a factory worker. It just, you know, one's doing this and the other one is doing this. The one is in Krishna consciousness and the other is in material consciousness. Because of the consciousness behind the activity, like the question about how to apply. The consciousness behind the activity. One is being implicated, the other is not implicated in the reactions to their work because of the consciousness behind is different. And the normal, well, let's say the disease condition is protective consciousness, and the exceptional or natural healthy state is Krishna consciousness. That is, I'm doing this for Krishna consciousness. And that's the bhakti principle, and the bhakti principle acts like fire that will burn the very fuel that starts the fire. Next. Yeah, I'll just read this. A devotee in full Krishna consciousness, this is text 23 of report. A devotee in full Krishna consciousness appears superficially to be a great karmi, always working. But the inner significance of the devotee's activities is that they are meant for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. This is called bhakti, or devotional service. Arjuna was apparently a fighter. But when by his fighting he satisfied the sense of Krishna, he became a devotee. But we're not lazy, complacent, dreamy, starry-eyed sentimentalists. We're interested, there's sentiment for sure, but the sentiment is how to please Krishna, and then actively engaging Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti, Rishite. So it's the Bhakti principle that addresses the implication of the soul with matter. Text 24. By discovering the faultiness of his desire to lord it over material nature, and by therefore giving it up, the living entity becomes independent and stands in his own glory. But part of this, part of the detachment through knowledge in the arena of bhakti, you need to know what's what. We're not part of the material existence. We're doing things within the material existence that are part of the necessity, observing the necessities of life. If I don't have a body to engage in devotional service, there's no devotional service. So I have to maintain the body. I do things to maintain the body so that I can carry on with my service to Krishna. And more than that, not, you know, like I don't go there. If there's something that from the fruits of my work is beyond the necessity for maintenance, somehow see that that gets used in service to Krishna in a positive way. Prabhupada writes in the purport, when one is actually situated in devotional service, that is his independent position. Interesting. Because if you say servant, you're dependent on the master. Voluntarily, devotional service is voluntary. That's, you know, slavery is loving service. But that's the position. Like Narada, this is from the first canto. Narada is completely free. He can travel anywhere at any time. Doesn't need a visa. Doesn't need a passport. Doesn't need an aircraft. Doesn't need anything. to go in the spiritual world, but you're in a world of lower planets anywhere at all. He has complete freedom. Why? Because he's fully dependent upon the Supreme Lord. In devotion, he has complete freedom. That's a position of actual, to maximum degree, a living entity can be independent. That's the maximum independence. Because then, the empowerment is the empowerment of the Supreme Lord. According to whatever he wants us to do, we can do it. We can do way beyond our capacity. Because it's not us, it's him. It's his potency. Or as it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, one who has faith, implicit faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can do anything. A layman can climb a mountain. I'm sitting in a chair because I have a knee problem. And when I had a knee problem, just even walking upstairs was not major. But I went to a surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, and said, you don't need surgery, you need physical therapy. Because where the break is in your meniscus, the cartilage that connects the shin bone and the thigh bone, is torn. But it's not torn in a way where it's impeding motion. It's swollen, so what you need to do is you need to build up where that was torn the rest of the structure because of the therapy. Okay. No surgery, okay. So I went to the physical therapist and she got out her clipboard and said, okay, what is it that you want? What do you mean? What is your objective? What's your sankalpa? I didn't use the language right now. What is it that you would like? What's going to inspire you to do all these exercises that I'm going to give you? I said, well, I want to be able to walk up and down stairs like that old man, a crippled old guy. Okay. What else? I said, well, why? I'd rather. I said, well, do you want me to get back out on the tennis court and play tennis or basketball? I said, and I thought about it. So I'll tell you, I'm planning to go to India in a year. She said, oh, I've got a friend who's going to India. It's such a nice, she's really enthusiastic. So when I go to India, there's this holy place. I didn't get into it too much. I was just an American person. There's a holy place. It's like a mountain. And people circumambulate and go around the mountain. It's like, it takes like 6 hours. And I'd be able to do that. I said, okay. So just a little sharing is when you do physical therapy, you're supposed to do 30 of these and 20 of those and something, three sets of those and da 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 da. So when I was just doing just the counting thing, it was really boring. But when I was meditating on I want to be able to go all the way around over and over. It was really inspirational. It was really nice. So I understood from that practical experience the difference between a mechanical way of doing devotional service and a devotional way of doing devotional service. For what purpose? At least Krishna. That's how you get something. I get relief, moksha, or I get happiness, whatever my idea of one's idea of happiness is. My karma will go away. It's not bothering me. Something like that. It's just service to Krishna. The world of the difference. Transcendental world versus the material world. When one is actually situated in devotional service, that is his independent position. Less intelligent men cannot understand the position of the eternal servant of the Lord because the word servant is used. They become confused. They cannot understand that this servitude is not the servitude of this material world. To be the servant of the Lord is the greatest position. If one can understand this, and can thus revive one's original nature of eternal servitorship of the Lord, one stands fully independent. A living entity's independence is lost by material contact. In the spiritual field, he has full independence. And therefore, there is no question of becoming dependent on the three modes of material nature. This position is attained by a devotee. And therefore, he gives up the tendency for material enjoyment after seeing its faultiness. But this is just expanding the response to Devahuti's concern, which is a natural concern. Once you're in the material world, to get out is very difficult. Right? Everywhere you turn, whatever door you go to, you know, there's another door behind that door, the door doesn't open or something. It's you're implicated. So, and how do you get out? Do something, it's like chapter 3 Bhagavad Gita, if you do something material, you're implicated in karmic reaction. And you can't do nothing, because the soul is active and the body will expire. If you do something and do nothing, you're implicated. What are you going to do? Which is her question. Devotional service. Okay, last verse for this evening. In the dreaming state, we are in the dream metaphor, one's consciousness is almost covered, and one sees many inauspicious things, but when he's awakened and fully conscious, such inauspicious things cannot bewilder him. That's a metaphor. And we all know about dreaming. Sometimes we have good dreams, sometimes we have bad dreams. And, you know, the inauspicious things that happen in the bad dreams, they seem fearful. Or, you know, wake up and you're perspiring, or sometimes people scream. They wake up hearing their own screaming because it was so fearful. What's up, man? What's it? Everything okay? I don't know what happened. It's fearful. But that fearfulness, when you're awake, is over. It was just a dream. So Prabhupada carries on, and I'll just read this short section, we're done. He takes the metaphor and just extends it a little bit. In contaminated consciousness, one sees everything to be for his own enjoyment. That's the dream. But in pure consciousness or Krishna consciousness, he sees that everything exists for the enjoyment of the Supreme Enjoyer. That is the difference between the dream state and wakefulness. The state of contaminated consciousness is compared to dream consciousness, and Krishna consciousness is compared to the awakened state of life. Prabhupada speaks about philanthropy. So a philanthropist wants to do something because somebody's suffering, and so he does something. He feeds the people, or opens a hospital, or starts a school, or does something. And so, that it's like, you know, somebody that's in a dream, and, you know, you do something that's in the dream that's just part of the dream. It doesn't solve the problem. But the problem is they're dreaming. They're not yet awake. So the real welfare work is to awaken for ourselves and for others, to awaken to a position where no more dreaming, no more illusory pursuits. Yeah, so that's the message. Easier said than done. But in one sense, your devotional service is very simple. And it's very pleasing to the heart also. But it's attractive. Unfortunately, we're distracted by, you know, the residual effect of the blades of the pen spinning are so such long involvement in material affairs that even we know better, we still indulge ourselves in material affairs. There's I'll end with this. There's a verse. We have a farm community in Pennsylvania, you know, the geography in the U.S., right? Here's the United States, and New York is over here, and Los Angeles is over here. That's the West Coast, that's the East Coast. So about a four-hour drive towards the west, in the middle of an agricultural state, we had a farm. Very nice farm. And Prabhupada gave it his name, Gita Nagari. Place where the Gita is sung. And lived the life and devotion mission. So, for something like 20 years, I've been conducting retreats there. It's a very nice place. Lots of cows, peacocks. We brought somebody about peacocks from Vrindavan, and there was a bazillion peacocks all over the place. A nice stream, and agricultural land, and trees. Very peaceful, very different than New York City. And very nice. They built residential accommodation for retreat visitors. So it's very nice. But this coming, we have a national holiday that comes every year at the end of the month of May. So it's, the winter is over, spring is full, everything is green and flowers and not too hot, that summer hasn't come yet. It's a really nice time. Perfect weather, perfect setting. So yeah, that's what we have every year. And the theme this year is going to be the role of faith in the unfolding of bhakti. So the introductory message is a verse from Bhagavata speakers from the 11th canto, chapter 20, Uddhava Gita. That's what I would call a big part of what I was spending my time today doing. The verse begins, Yadrich Chaya. You can look it up later. 7. So Krishna is explaining to Uddhava, Yadrich Chaya. Yadrich Chaya means somehow or other, causelessly. There's cause and effect, and then there's causeless. So, by the mercy of a devotee, that's the enriched chaya, some devotee, one gets the association of devotee. And in that association of devotee, was giving proper guidance, some attraction for the message of Krishna comes. And through that attraction of the message for Krishna, then one understands the temporary nature of pursuit of material happiness. However, one is not yet matured in the spiritual activity, and so there's a mix. One still indulges in material activity. Knowing its temporary nature, knowing that it's going to bring misery, but just out of conditioning, continuing to do so. But the operative principle is that faith in the process of hearing, chanting, worshipping, taking only Krishna prasad, and in that way, gradually one can become purified. Krishna's teaching to me. There's verses before that and after that, but faith begins with the association of those that have faith, and those that are carrying bhakti, they share some of that devotion by doing the workplace. A little bit, not too much. You get fired if you do too much. But a little bit, like when people ask. Then, slowly, that person will receive some bhakti. They may, or may not, but they may appreciate like one of the classes that we heard in Mayapur was given by Vaisheshika Prabhu, and he's our minister for book distribution in North America. He's a Grihastha. Amazing devotee. He was describing, he was on Harinam one time in Tokyo, and they had stopped, and there were a bunch of shops, and right behind where they had stopped was a butcher shop. And he was, you know, wondering what's going to happen. So he noticed one little man came out of the butcher shop and approached Vaisheshika to see one of his books. He knew how to say in Japanese, here's a book, please give a donation. The man went back in the shop and got some money and came out and gave the money to get the book. And he was sitting in his butcher shop reading the book. And he was thinking, how powerful is Prabhupada can reach the hearts of even butchers. Just by reaching out, something is different than it was before. And it would have, or no, and it wouldn't have changed had they not gone on right now and given the holy name and given the hope. Anyway, it's really nice. Sorry. He was describing his realization for that. How powerful are Prabhupada's books. It may affect somebody immediately, it may affect somebody delayed, maybe the book may end up with somebody else. But there should be something here. This is another little story, okay? Another of my godfathers is a Grihastha who had two children, and both son and the daughter are now married, and they have their job and everything. They're doing very well in their career. So he's of a similar age to me, in his early 60s. So he's in his candidacy for sannyas, He was requested to go to some remote places that don't get sannyasis to visit. So one of the places was Burma. I don't know much about Burma, but from him I heard the government is really strict. Muslim government really strict about anything. I think I heard about Burma. So when he went to Burma, he met a young brahmachari who is now, you know, one person has developed a whole yatra in Burma, like, you know, 40, 50 devotees in a country that doesn't like anything other than Islam. So what happened was, so many years ago, in New York City, somebody was passing by Harinam, and someone approached them and they asked, can you please take this book? And they took the book just out of courtesy and gave a donation and didn't know what to do with the book, they put it in a suitcase. And they went back to Burma. And then, they opened the suitcase, they put the book on the shelf, Bhagavad Gita. And then a man's son wanted to learn English. So one of the ways to learn a language is you read a book in that language. So I looked in the bookshelf and saw in English, one book. Took the book out of Bhagavad Gita and started reading, and he really liked it. And when he opened up the book, a card fell out. The card was a contact card saying, persons interested in the subject matter can contact the corresponding secretary for the BBT. So he filled it out and sent it into the BBT in Los Angeles. Time passed. Meanwhile, the young man is doing his education, and you know, wondering, how will I find out more about this? So, Bhakti Vikash Maharaj was visiting in Los Angeles. He said, well, I got this inspiration. I'm going to be going to such and such place, and if I could stop in Burma, if there's somebody, a contact person to go and see, and it could help them in their Krishna consciousness. Well, we
little bit of records.
They found a record of this young man that had sent in the car. And so he decided to go and stop in Burma. I hope I got it right. And the law is you can't enter Burma. The most you can get is a 24-hour visa to enter if you're from West Virginia. I don't know what the requirements are. At least that was like some years ago. So he got his 24-hour entry permit and went right to the boy's home because that was on the car. And when the boy came home from school, there was Bhakti Kashmar sitting at the dining room table. Not in a dhoti, because you can't do that in those countries. But, you know, he explained the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and the process of devotional service and how to chant dead beads and how to offer his food and how to learn more. And that young man had became the leader in that place, wherever it is in Burma. Now there's like 40, 50 young devotees going out regularly and going out to a distribution just through one book. Now, not all stories end up like that. But, you know, it's quite amazing. There's more. Potency invested in the holy name and invested in scripture, especially scripture that has realized commentary connected to it. Very, very powerful. And the mercy of Lord Chaitanya flows with those activities of giving those names to other people.
Property of my father, that his father is the Lord Vishnu.
they'll enter the spiritual world. So what's the goal of our life? Have no misfortune? That's a dream. It's going to come. Good fortune is going to come. What's our mission in life? Now it's a little easier when someone gets older, like you're getting older, than it is someone that's younger. They hear the same message and think, well, I have lots of opportunity for enjoyment ahead of me because I'm young. And anyway, different ways of thinking along those lines. I'll get real serious later, but you know, getting real serious later doesn't happen later. It's like, you know, being charitable. I'll be charitable when I become rich. Which is the principle of charity to observe. I have modest, let me give something. And then as I get more, I'll give more. Or I'll wait till I'm wealthy and then I'll give something. Charity is a principle to live by. And simply devotion is a principle to live by. So if it's a principle to live by, then you cultivate it. So do you understand it's a principle to live by? And then, you know, the reversals, it's the Prabhupada's term. You know, things seem to be going well and all of a sudden things, you know, turn upside down. You were going forward and now you're going in reverse. What happened? Reversals happen. Not new. That's just like, oh, I must be bad. It happens. Everything happens to the great devotees. It happens to medium devotees. It happens to non-devotees. It happens to little devotees. It happens. So how do we address ourselves to that? And the good fortune. We can be proud and something. What's not a dream is devotional service to Krishna. Fixing our mind on the personality of God and trying to please Him. That's not a dream. Although to the materialist, that looks like you're a dreamer. You can't, you know, do something practical. We're doing something practical. In terms of worldly, as well as otherworldly. That takes higher consciousness, it takes being freed from the lower modes of nature, being able to contemplate peacefully and thoughtfully higher goals of life than sense gratification and food activity. Indulging the senses and the urges of the senses. Religiously. It takes a thoughtful person to be able to function like that. And purification and proper guidance will help enable them.